Greetings, my friends. This is the brain of TV's Pinky in the Brain, and you are listening to This Week in Geek with Mike the Birdman Dodd and the rest of the Twig crew. Twigs. Come to think of it, Pinky, I have not used twigs in any of my latest plans for world domination. If this works, then Mike and the crew will rule by my side. Yes!
So damn nerdy. I'll take you to the comic shop. I'll show you all the bills I drop. But when I grab my Polaris box.
What the hell are y'all looking at me?
You're the one that always starts it. Okay, that's fine. Hey, what's going on, guys? Mike the Birdman Dodd here with Beyond the Gauntlet.
Recorded semi-live from your brain at 14 Mill Street in Orangeville, Ontario. How the hell are you? It is just the Monday after the Victoria Day long weekend. Hopefully it was good for you. It was good for me. That's what she said. Okay. Today we're going to be talking about the Marvel number ones. There's been a recent relaunch, I guess, of these issues. And of course, I'm actually kind of right up this time. But I'm not alone as I proceed down more comics that will inevitably end up in my pull list.
I'm Chris Peddle, owner and operator of The Gauntlet, and we're going to go over Marvel Now, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
And I'm Jeff DeHaan. Oh, don't forget, it's the all-new Marvel Now. It's bright and shiny and brand spanking new.
And it probably sucks. And we have...
Marvin Law, semi-professional compliment.
Semi-professional.
Bit of a special guest for us here today, but looking forward to it. It's always nice to, we've chatted with Marvin. He's made several appearances here at the Gauntlet, so it'll be nice to get someone who's in the industry get their take on things.
Marvin does all my really cool artwork you see pop up on my Facebook from time to time, so he is legit as shit, as they might say.
And he did that really awesome Ghostbusters piece you had commissioned, the one that was the Days of
Future Past rip.
Yeah, that was awesome.
He also did RoboCop and Judge Dredd fighting aliens and Terminators, Darkwing Duck fighting a Sentinel.
Oh, he's got some great ones. He's done some wrestler pieces, too, that I've seen. So Edge, who happens to be from Orangeville. And I've got a Joker print that he did, which is creepy as all hell. Bit of thanks due to the guys who came up with the whole removing the face thing to add that creepiness, but fine job, fantastic artist, sir, so welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So where do we start with these Marvel number ones? I've read a couple of them.
I haven't quite read everything either. I've read as much as Chris could get in front of me, but unfortunately some either had been out long enough that they sold out, or some just sold out quickly. I never got to read The Amazing Spider-Man number one, which was the most recent to come out, I believe, right, Chris?
Yes.
But it was off shelves in no time, so I never got a chance to read that one. But I was going over it today and kind of looking at some of the creative teams so I could sound somewhat knowledgeable. And I read a lot more than I thought I did.
You got the list there, Jeff, so pick one. We'll talk about it.
True enough. Okay, we'll start with one that I thought could be a little mediocre. We'll start with Ghost Rider. It had a bit of controversy to it.
Ah, Ghost Rider, yes. That one was a love-hate relationship with a lot of people, at mm-hmm. least in my store. Mm-hmm.
The writer was Felipe Smith, and art was Trad Moore.
Now, here's the thing that I thought was, we're doing the good, the bad, and the ugly with each one of these issues. So the good was the fact that there's another Ghost Rider comic, you know? The bad in my case with this issue was the fact that I did not think that the art style fit the nature of Ghost Rider. Ghost Rider is a very dark, sinister character from hell. He's traditionally always been drawn very noir, very, very dark, very dreary. And you put an artist on that looks very anime on him. And I didn't quite think that fit with him.
And that's something that you've actually brought up in past episodes with Marvel in general, that a lot of times they don't mix their characters and the artists
correctly,
to the best of their ability.
Like, I have no problem with the actual art itself. I just don't think it fits Ghost Rider. Now, if this artist was moved on to, like, Nova, or was moved on to, like, Spider-Man, or something that was a little bit more happy-go-lucky, I think this art style would be fantastic.
I do have a bit of an issue. I found a lot of the facial expressions, like the extreme pardon me, the extreme facial expressions like shock and stuff like that. And I think this had to do with the, like you said, the anime style, but it was very kind of out there, like really over the top.
Yeah.
Almost cartoonish.
Now, for me, the ugly in this issue was wrapping around to the redesign of Ghost Rider. In fact, I honestly think the comic should have been called Ghost Driver. Because of the fact that Ghost Rider no longer has a motorbike, he now drives a car.
What?
And his mask has been been reworked to look almost Lucha Libre like as a skull that flames out of the forehead as opposed to the whole mask.
I agree with you on the skull face. Sorry, Marvin was making faces. I agree with you on the skull face. I don't like the look of that. I have no problem with him being in the car and keeping it Ghost Rider. I mean,
is it a smart car?
No, it's like it's a.
Is it green?
No.
This sounds so stupid.
No, it's a hot rod. The car looks nice, and the story wasn't bad. Like the
writing's
actually all right.
The writing in the book was actually pretty solid.
Yeah.
I just didn't think that the dark nature of Ghost Rider fit the anime style arc.
And I completely agree, especially since it's a gritty like Latino guy on the streets in New York or what, I think it's New York, that is the main focus of the book and everything, and that anime style doesn't lend to it. Like, I completely agree. The only real issue I had with this book was the art style.
Yeah.
The story I thought was pretty solid. I was okay with the car, like I said, because, and granted, if you're going to be looking at the Nicolas Cage movies, they're not the best representation. But you had you had an old Ghost.
What are you talking about? Movies are so good. Shameless.
Come on, Nick Cage.
you had a Ghost Rider who rode a horse.
That was cool.
That's what I'm saying. It doesn't have to be a motorcycle or whatever every time.
Hot
rod actually looks really cool, all flamed up.
But it would be pretty stupid if it was like a Segway.
Well, yeah, but it's not. It's a nice hot rod.
Marvin, did you get a chance to read this one?
I have not had a chance to read much of the Marvel Now books, releases. Mind you, I can understand Marvel's perchance for wanting to go outside the regular box, because this can probably much harken back to what they did with the Punisher and Marvel Knights, when he was
the old
demon
angel
hunter,
guns.
The demon hunter hunting angels and things like that, demons. It's one of those things that it's such a classic idea, because the Ghost Rider that we know from the motorcycle has been around since the 60s.
Yeah.
And so, even though he was Johnny Blaze and then Dan Ketch in the 90s, it never hurts to try the experiment outside the box to give it maybe
a refresh, so to speak.
It's just completely wild idea out of left corner, left field at that point. Because it's like, remember after the whole Demon Hunter thing with the Punisher?
Yeah.
They went back to the basics Punisher with Garth Ennis and Steve Dillon.
And
Steve
that
Dillon.
Was arguably one of his biggest runs.
Yeah. And so it never hurts to sometimes maybe go crazy for a bit, try to do something, experiment. But if it works, great. You got a whole new concept for Ghost Rider. If it fails,
you could always go back.
Go back to basics with the classic black thing. And
how many people
to.
Thought Superior Spider-Man wasn't going to work? Doc Ock and Spider-Man? Oh, no. And then people were saying, oh, Peter Parker's coming back already? No.
So it's like, it never hurts to try something daring and then everyone's like going, this will never work. Because the hardest part would be just to not try at all. Uh-huh. It's to say, well, let's go back to the thing that worked before. And it's just like, everyone's going to say all the same old thing.
Especially for these legacy characters that have been around for, 60, 70 years or whatever,
Well, then, if you look at the public consciousness for certain characters, everybody thinks Ghost Rider, you think Nick Cage, you think stupid. So I don't think they had a whole lot to lose by trying something new.
Yeah, this is true.
So what's the next one on the list?
Next one is actually one that Mike will probably have a lot to contribute to. It is Avengers Undercover, which is the sequel to Avengers Arena. Same creative team, Dennis Hopeless and Kev Walker.
This is one Chris didn't put in my box. I didn't know about this until just this minute.
Well, you know what?
I was really hoping you would talk about Dupe.
Oh, we'll get there.
Well, Dupe's one that I didn't read, but we will get to it for sure. Since you did read Dupe, you can bring that up shortly. But since you were big into Avengers Arena, this is probably a must for you. Now, again, I only read the first issue. But what I loved about this, the good for me, was that it was written in a way that you didn't feel lost, but at the same time, it made me want to go back and grab the Avengers Arena trade.
Such
because
a good series.
It's the fallout of that series, but the characters are introduced in a way that you know who they are and what's going on. And that's something that like I said, it makes me want to grab
the trade. It's brilliantly written, too. It's very captivating. I honestly think out of the stuff that Marvel's pumping out right now, that this is one of their better books as far as its writing quality. It's written very clever. It's very engaging. The storytelling and panel work in the book, I think, is actually fantastic with the way that the panels tell the story as well as the actual story itself. I honestly, my only complaint about this book is you might be a little lost, and I'm not saying a lot lost, but a little lost if you didn't read Avengers Arena.
And that's quite possible. Like, I only read the first issue of Undercover, so I didn't know. I haven't kept up with it, as I'm sure you have, Chris. But
do you have a number one here?
I would have to double check.
Okay, cool.
So I don't know how much, if you know, they delve back into Avengers Arena as you read the further issues of Undercover. But one thing I really liked is I feel like a lot of these characters had a lot more depth to them than you normally see in like a B or C list set of characters that are like, because a lot of these are like, you don't necessarily know them. They're not your Hulks, your Thors, your Iron Mans, your Black Widows, or anything. They're the kids. They're the young guys that a lot of people don't recognize. But there's a lot of depth to these characters.
That's what I like about the book is it's giving these characters that depth that the Thors, the Hulks, the Spider-Mans, the Iron Mans have in such a way because it's giving them their backstory. This is almost like their initiation into the comic world, and therefore they are getting that history that they need that will shape them for the future.
This is their Amazing Fantasy 15 kind of
exactly,
thing.
Exactly.
One of the things that I'd like to know is, do the character deaths from Avengers Arena actually mean something here?
Yes, they do. Even in the first issue, a couple of them are addressed, and what happened, the events of Avengers Arena are addressed as early as that first issue.
That's good.
And like I said, that's what made me want to go back and grab the Avengers Arena trade, because I want to know what happened and why these characters are the way they are.
See, that's one thing that actually attracted me to the Avengers Arena is I love it when there's deaths in books and they somewhat stick. I mean, the thing that got my attention with Avengers Arena initially was it's Battle Royale.
Yeah.
People are going to die they're going to stay dead.
Even the cover of it was an homage to Battle Royale, exactly.
One of the things that I really hope going forward is I hope this book will be a good dipping my toe back into Marvel to kind of stick with stuff, because
I think you'll find that with a lot of these number ones. I don't know what you read and what might have stuck, but I found with a lot of these number ones, and we'll get to more of them later, that there's a lot of real good jumping on.
Yeah, there was a few of these I'm like, I didn't expect this to be this good. And there were also a few, like, I didn't expect this to be
this bad.
brain-numbingly retarded.
Yeah, that's true. All right, well, let's jump into...
Why don't we do the all-new Dupe? Who is the creative team on all-new Dupe?
I didn't actually write that one down, because that's not one that I got to read.
Ah, I see.
So, okay. Mike, you read Dupe?
Allow me to give this podcast its PG-13. Fuck Dupe. This book was so stupid. I actually, like, Chris hands me it. I'm like, hey, what's this? Oh, he's a character in the X-Men. I looked at him. I'm like, dude, I hate you. You've wasted 23 minutes of my life. I'm not getting that back.
Here we go. I forgot I had my laptop connected. Written by Peter Milligan. Oh.
I'm going to find him.
Sorry, that just says cover artist. Cover artist is Mike Allred, which once we get to Silver Surfer, you'll get my thoughts on him. But I don't know who the interiors is by. It doesn't say. And this is on Marvel's site, too.
I don't even know what the hell happened in it. Like, he's like some alien dude. He's involved with the X-Men somehow, and he has to marry Kitty Pryde. But he can't speak English. And then at the end of the book, he pulls out his intestines and his guts out through his mouth, and suddenly he speaks. He's like, no, Dupe, you can understand me.
Dupe is one of those characters that is just...
rage-inducing?
Yeah.
He speaks in a language, quote-unquote, all his own, according to Wikipedia.
It's enough to bring your piss to a boil. I just couldn't believe how bad this was.
Oh, my God. What are your thoughts on Dupe?
What I was expecting. I'm sorry.
Marvin, what do you think of Dupe?
Dupe's...
even just as a character, even if you didn't read
the... he's interesting, because his creation was during the Mike Allred X-Force run.
Mm.
And so Dupe is one of those either loved or hated characters. Either you get him, or it's like Deadpool. Either you love the character, or you're ready to throw him against the wall. Just Just get him done. Be over and done with him. He's like, I'm done with this. I'm done. Okay, this guy, I don't understand him.
I couldn't believe it, though. Like, just the fact that a character like this gets a book. You could have given this to any other new person. Just
is this an ongoing or a miniseries?
It will be a miniseries.
Oh, thank God for that. It's not worth the trees it's printed on.
Oh, God.
We have less oxygen because of Dupe. Let that sink in for a minute.
Okay, let's move to another book so we're no longer wasting time.
Oh, let's talk about Silver Surfer. Equally as friggin' stupid.
All right, well, let's jump to Silver Surfer. All sure, right. We'll stick with the Mike Allred, since I already mentioned him, the Mike Allred train that we're on here. I really didn't like Silver Surfer that much.
I couldn't follow it.
The worst part about it for me was the art. And I'm not saying that Mike Allred isn't a good artist. All I'm saying is that his style doesn't appeal to me.
Marvin, I think you should beat the shit out of him and take his job.
I'd probably read Silver Surfer if you drew on it, just to be saying.
Not that we're S-ing your like D here, but seriously, the art in this is terrible. Okay, I pulled Chris aside when you handed me the book, and I had you grab one of the free comic book day Archies, and we did a panel-by-panel comparison. Well, it looks like an Archie comic.
I've never liked Allred stuff. Like, he was doing when they just did the original Marvel Now... I don't know if it was technically Fantastic Four, the one that had She-Hulk and Miss Thing and Medusa on it, or FF. That was Allred, and I didn't like his art there. I've always known him as the Madman artist. That's all I know him as, and that's because
the guy with the lightning bolt on his chest.
Yeah,
that's Allred.
Really?
That's Allred, yep.
Wow, that blows my mind.
Silver Surfer wasn't terribly hard to follow, but I've never been a big into the Marvel cosmic stuff to begin with.
Now we're trying to go through each comic and do the good, the bad, and the ugly. You know, Dupe, there was no good.
It might be useful for toilet paper.
It was just bad and ugly. But with Silver Surfer, I can say, as a Silver Surfer fan myself, if you can wrap your head around the art, the story was very classic Silver Surfer in it.
Really?
It was reminiscent of classic Silver Surfer, which to me is a homage, and I loved the direction of the first issue. Aside, I just didn't think Allred's art fit Silver Surfer.
And I agree. One thing I would say, though, is I tend to gravitate towards writers, and I'll look at a writer and be like, if it's someone I trust, I could have faith in them. And it's written by Dan Slott. So
that breaks my heart, because he did Superior, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, and he's doing amazing right now as well. Slott's a fantastic writer, so I would have enough faith if I were collecting this book to be like, okay, I think Slott will make something out of it, kind of thing.
And that's the good for me is that
Dan Slott's on it.
The second issue of that has come out since, and the second issue does get better story-wise. Again, it's still Allred drawing it, so those of you who shunned Allred will still probably shun this just as much. Mm-hmm. But overall, Silver Surfer, if you are looking for classic Silver Surfer feel, it does have the actual feel in the story. The art, however, did not fit. I would rather have seen something a little bit more detailed for the art of the Silver Surfer than the loose style of Allred. Yeah. Do you have any comments on Allred, Marv?
Allred's, it's one of those things where sometimes artists aren't everyone's flavor. And Allred is a classic styled indie artist.
And that's what I was saying about how it's not that I think he sucks. It's just not my cup of tea. Like, I look at pictures of Madman and stuff like that, and I don't think that's bad art. Mm-hmm. I just think that's Madman.
See, I think Madman looks cool. Mm-hmm. I remember back in the day, I thought that thing looked amazing. I wanted to find the Madman toys.
But I had no idea that was the same guy. And that's what Chris was saying, too, you know? So
what Marvel character could that work with, though? Or what Marvel character could...
Allred's style is very old school. It's kind of reminiscent.
You almost expect to see the Kirby crackle dots in his
drawing. So I think he would probably pull Captain America off decently.
I can see that.
I can see him doing Cap. I can see him maybe doing like the
Hulk, maybe old school Hulk.
I would say maybe an old school Hulk
comic, I could see him doing a goofy Deadpool one shot,
or even a goofy Deadpool one shot or something to that effect. I think he would be decent at that. Or take something that's more espionage based, like a Secret Avengers, or
possibly. Yeah,
you know who I think he might work with. I don't know whether this character still exists in the Marvel Universe. Do you guys remember a character called Slapstick?
Oh, absolutely.
One shot with him would be
one thing. I can say about Allred's art, though, you don't want to give him anything dark. He seems to really love color. He's a very colorful artist.
There's always Impossible Man. What's the green guy from the FF
game? Yeah, Impossible Man.
Impossible Man. Yeah. So Sleepwalker.
Sleepwalker, yeah.
He's Machine Man.
He'd be awesome on Sleepwalker. I mean, just thinking back to the 90s with that, that would really work.
Actually, my main introduction to Sleepwalker and Machine Man were actually Miss Marvel, which is what we're going to segue into next. Actually, Captain Marvel. Because we'll stick with Carol Danvers, who was Miss Marvel at the time.
I kind of like this book, actually.
I did, too. I've been a fan of Carol Danvers for a while, though, even in her Miss Marvel days. And I feel like she was one of those characters that had so much potential, and Marvel just didn't know what to do with her.
And they're turning her more cosmic now. They're letting her escape the bounds of Earth and get off into space and kind of make a bigger name for herself,
I really think that's a good idea. I love the transition into Captain Marvel that they've done. I mean, even as Miss Marvel, she always had that connection to Captain Marvel because that's how she got her powers and everything.
Yeah.
But transitioning her into being Captain Marvel, I think, was fantastic. One thing I found really surprising in the number one issue, I didn't know she was dating Rhodey. Apparently her and Rhodes were apparently dating, and then she's like, I'm
"For those of you, those of you playing the whole home game, Rhodes is War Machine,
Iron Patriot now, isn't he?
Or Iron Patriot, as we'll find out
soon enough. Yes,
well, War Machine is such a cooler name, though.
War Machine is much cooler.
Not kid friendly.
Although I kind of wonder with putting her in the more cosmic stuff. I kind of wonder if they're doing that, if Marvel's trying to position their Marvel Cinematic Universe stuff to focus on some of the stuff with Guardians of the Galaxy coming out in just a few months.
It's possible. I think it's something where their cosmic universe has kind of existed on its own and not necessarily had to deal with a lot of the earthly issues and problems and dangers and stuff. And I feel like it's kind of been a niche genre within Marvel, and I think they want to make it more mainstream.
Yeah, because like the Marvel Cosmic, I know nothing about. Because
they actually said in the issue that when they were like, hey, Carol, we're going to send you into space, we're going to send you into space because we want a team of Avengers in space. Because the Guardians obviously are kind of their own thing, so they can't necessarily be ruled, if you will, by the likes of Cap.
And who was the actual creative team behind the Captain Marvel?
We have Kelly Sue DeConnick as the writer, and artist was David Lopez. This was one where I felt they went together. From what I remember, because a lot of these I did read like a month or two ago when they first came out, so I don't necessarily have the best recollection, but from what I recall for Lopez's art, it was kind of traditional modern day comics. Like, it wasn't bad at all. It was good, and it suit the book, but it wasn't something that was super unique that stood out to me, kind of thing. But it fit the book. It didn't distract or detract. Actually.
It did its job, is what you're saying.
Good to see.
And I agree with you. I thought that was one of the good points with the book, was the artist seemed to fit the book.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment you find that an artist fits the book, the less distracted you are in general with the book.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. Do we want to, since we touched on it, let's jump on to Iron Patriot.
Sure.
I didn't read this one, unfortunately.
Writer Aless, it's A-L-E-S, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, Cott for the last name, and art by Gary Brown. This is one of those things, the first thing that I noticed from this, and this was even without reading it, just by the cover alone, the fact that they're changing James Rhodes from War Machine to Iron Patriot is clearly being reflective of Iron Man 3 and of the movies. But I'm okay with it because this is less of a slap in the face than the blatant slap that comes from Nick Fury Jr. being black. So, you know, because that's just like a sad trombone moment for Marvel when they introduced Nick Fury Jr.
I'm sorry, I didn't have it up, but
that's
okay.
That works too. Yeah, They let their little yodeler go off the end or whatever that game was.
I mean, part of that is all the marketing. And mm-hmm. I mean, Marvin and I actually were talking earlier today about how some of the marketing strategies is their attempt is to also hook people who had no idea what was going on in the comic books by the movies. And if they suddenly go and watch a movie and Nick Fury is being portrayed by Samuel L. Jackson, mm-hmm. a fantastic black actor, and they come to the comic books and he's some white dude is no comparison. They can't make that connection they had in the movies.
And we kind of touched upon this.
I was going to say that.
A few months ago. I really think give it 3 years. By the time Phase 3 is well underway, I think you're going to see a streamlined puppy, a streamlined Marvel universe. I really think that.
Probably, but again, and it, like you said, Mike, this is something we've touched on, is that Marvel knows that the faithful, the diehards, us, are going to buy their books. So in order to get more people to buy books, it makes sense to market what the non-fans know, which is the movies.
And this is why you see in both Marvel and DC now, whenever a movie happens or a television show, how the comics now adapt to become like the show as mm-hmm. opposed to vice versa. Like, I even noticed in DC Comics that I'm reading The Future's End right now, and Diggle is actually in The Future's End, and he's a character from the Arrow TV show that was never in the comics.
And they brought in Chloe Sullivan from like Smallville.
That's
like,
right.
A couple
That's
years
right.
ago.
Yeah. Yes, because she was originally for the show, and they brought her into the comics.
So I mean, this
Coulson's
is not, this,
another good example who came in with Nick Fury Jr.
Exactly. So this is not a strange happenstance. It's not happened before.
Mm-hmm. The book overall, Iron Patriot book, meh. It wasn't the writing wasn't bad, but it wasn't my cup of tea. I found.
Yeah, with Iron Patriot, I just thought that the first issue wasn't exciting enough to capture me. There was a lot of red tape and a lot of backstory, which just didn't capture me. And again, the art style for this book, it was a very noir style, and I don't think the book is trying to present itself noir style.
It's almost more of a, I don't want to say political thriller, but yeah. With his whole Iron Patriot thing, it definitely does have that kind of military political undertones to it, I felt.
Yeah, and I just didn't, I thought that they were going with a noir art style with
the art is something you could have saw on, like, say, Black Widow or something along
exactly.
those lines.
Exactly, and speaking of Black Widow, did you read the first Black Widow?
I've actually been keeping up entirely on Black Widow because my wife reads it, so if there's a free comic in the house, I will pick it up. The writing is actually someone who's fairly new, but I've really liked recently, Nathan Edmondson, with art by Phil Noto. I really like this one. I find the art reflects the noir book.
Oh, definitely.
It's still colorful because obviously I find the reds are really vibrant, which is great for a Black Widow book because there's usually a lot of blood.
Well, not only that, it's like she's got the red hair too,
exactly.
So it really pops. His art
and so
style
far,
really does pop.
I believe there's only been 3 or 4 issues, but so far every cover has been bright red background on Black Widow.
Yeah,
like they're really the covers are really eye catching and really pop.
And the writing, I have actually been very impressed with.
Me
I mean,
too.
It's been one of the few Marvel books that are out right now that I can honestly say that I don't have any really bad thing to say about it.
I like the hook of the book is that it's basically, we all know she's an Avenger. You know, we all know she does stuff for S.H.I.E.L.D. and everything. This is almost the stuff she does in her downtime. And basically, she's trying to atone for her past indiscretions and, you know,
the Russian,
done.
You know,
exactly.
assassin thing.
Exactly. She's trying to atone for
and
those
on,
by doing
a,
good
And on
things.
A side note, her movie has been greenlighted.
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
So there is going to be Scarlett Johansson Black Widow movie, solo movie from
Which,
Marvel.
Let's be honest, anyone who's seen Captain America the Winter Soldier, this shouldn't come as that much of a surprise because she was fantastic in that. She was the glue of that movie.
That was a great mm-hmm. role. She did great, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Can't wait. Look forward to that one. See who's going to direct that film.
What's next on the list there?
You know what? We'll
Fantastic
stick...
Four.
All right.
That
I was going to go with something
awesome.
Else, but we'll go with Fantastic Four. Again, that's one that I had missed, so lead
yeah,
the way, sir.
Fantastic Four, it's basically like a reintroduction. The group is shattered. Like, Reed, like, put Ben Grimm in jail for murder. Johnny Storm wants
really?
To be some reality person. Like, he wants to take off and go do something else. And it's basically Sue. It's like Sue Storm telling us from the future. He's like, "Here's how my family got screwed up."
Interesting.
And it actually had me hooked. I actually looked at Chris afterwards. I'm like, "Chris, this is the first time I've given a crap about the Fantastic Four since the '90s, since the Rob Liefeld days, where she had the stupid four in the chest with her boobs. That's the first time I've cared." And I'm like, that says something. And there's just something about the art in this book I really grabbed me.
Well, let's see here. Speaking of the art, why do they only give the cover artist? Damn you, Marvel.com.
Witchcraft.
Leonard Kirk's the cover artist, anyways, and written by James Robinson.
And it's neat, though, just because, like, well, one of the aspects I liked is that it's Ben Grimm talking to Alicia, and they're like, we've been together and apart so often, why are we even bothering? And he's like, well, why don't we try this one more time?
And you know what? You're not the only person that that picked up the first issue of this that was from my store and was instantly hooked back into Fantastic Four again. Just little creative choices also that kind of differentiated the comic was, for example, for me, like, I enjoyed the fact that they took them out of the blue costumes and put them in red.
Mm-hmm.
And that right away, when you open the book and you see the red costumes, it kind of like is a slap in the face grab. It's like, oh, why are they not in their blue? Their normal blue costume.
Especially since that's what they're known for. Aside from that brief period of the white costumes for FF, like, they're always known for the blue. And that's one thing that caught my eye. I didn't get a chance to read it, but I was like, are they in red costumes?
Yeah, and I think sometimes just little tiny cosmetic changes like that is just enough in a comic book
to bring
people in and make them at least go, what's going on?
All it has to do is catch someone's eye.
Well, pretty much, I usually go with costume, like, drastic changes like this in costume is like, is more to visually symbolize a change in tone, like what they do with Grant Morrison's and Frank Quitely's X-Men, with putting in the black leather. It's like we're gonna differentiate our group from the previous group of character, their incarnations, by visually altering their appearance. So it reinforces that whole, this isn't your father's FF anymore. It's something completely different. It's like unique. It's a change of pace. So be prepared for it now.
And that's the thing too. Like when I opened the book and saw the red costumes and read the first couple panels of the book, and where Sue is saying all the crap that's gone down in the comic book, you felt like red was the tension color. And there was tension in that group. And it really made the book flow well. And nice. Again, the Fantastic Four is like one of the top books on my list right now. And I definitely, for those of you who may have missed the first few issues already, I definitely recommend the collected as soon as it comes out.
Now, here's my question. If the movie becomes successful, are we going to see Johnny Storm Jr. show up?
That's a tough one. And that's not a bad question to ask.
I was said kind of half tongue in cheek because when we did our movies episode a while back, we were talking about that. But it's true. If the new Fantastic Four becomes successful, are they going to try to make changes or are they going to leave that alone? Because don't forget, though, too, Fantastic Four isn't a Marvel property as far as movies go.
Yeah,
they're under
Fox.
20th Century Fox.
So I can completely see them ignoring it.
Yeah, probably.
Because they will feel that they didn't make the choice. And Marvel has actually publicly spoken, I believe. I read an article not too long ago saying that they have no problem with the actor playing him, but that is not a conscious choice they would have made as the studio to have a black actor portray Johnny Storm.
Yeah, and that's fine. And I said, like, whenever we were talking about it, that I don't have an issue with it, but I could see how people would, just for the sake of it not being the same as the source material. Like, people made a big stink about
what they would have done is they would have made both the brother and sister both the same race.
Well, speaking of seeing red, how about we jump to Daredevil? And this is kind of an if it ain't broke, don't fix it sort of thing. Because while this did start over, it's the exact same creative team. But I don't blame them. Mark Waid, who's a fantastic writer, you know, most comic fans know him, and Chris Samnee working on art, they did it when it was the Marvel Now, and when they relaunched it at number one, same creative team.
I honestly think the only reason this one actually got re-put to one was because of the fact that Daredevil actually moves from New York in
San
the Bronx
Fran,
to,
believe, right?
to San Francisco.
Yeah.
I think that's the only reason why this book was restarted at number one, because it's a new chapter in Daredevil's life. He's in a new city. But the creative team, you're right. If it's not broke, don't fix it. And the Mark Waid run of Daredevil from Marvel Now to the all-new Marvel Now was some of Marvel's best writing from that block of Marvel.
Yeah. One thing that I really liked, I loved Samnee's portrayal of his powers, like when his quote-unquote sight, like how he had it kind of red
radar vision.
His radar vision. I loved how he drew that. You don't see that very often, and it's kind of cool to actually see the world
as Daredevil sees it,
quote-unquote, through Daredevil's eyes. I thought that was really neat.
Did you look at this book at all, or have you seen any of Mark Waid's Daredevil run previously, even, Marvin?
I've heard a lot about the high acclaim from fans and critics alike.
Yeah,
and it's true. I understand. Like, I think part of the reason, besides his move to San Francisco for relaunching number one, is I think Marvel wants more readers to read the book. It's got the level of quality produced. So it's like, if we release a new number one, that means chances are more people will pick it up and get a chance to read it.
And since it's a quality book, more people will fall in love with it.
Just read the book because it's such good quality. You have to read, because I think part of the problem was with the previous run, the sales numbers weren't as high as they wanted them to be. So like I said, this is a new opportunity to maybe hook a new bunch of readers that probably wouldn't have picked it up originally.
Well, I know here in the store, I went from about 7 people who collected and read Daredevil on a monthly basis, jumped to about 15 people. So
there you
go.
It worked. You doubled, exactly. Well, people are going to grab it because it's got a number one on it, you know?
So, and if it's quality, it'll stay on it. So
one thing I found kind of, I don't want to say odd, but for lack of a better term, and this isn't a bad or an ugly or anything, but I found it really weird reading a Daredevil story where, or any superhero story, where he's outed. Like, people know he's Daredevil. So it's like there was no secret, and it was just kind of jarring to me, just from a comic fan, because you don't see that in most secret identities.
Daredevil's identity has been known for a while.
Yes, but I haven't been reading Daredevil. So I know I probably should be a bad comic fan, but I'm just saying.
He's no Batman, what can we say?
Well, he's probably pretty close. He's probably as close as Marvel's going to get.
Yeah.
You know, he's pretty
awesome.
I don't
know, Moon Knight. We'll talk about that soon.
Daredevil's, he's still public knowledge?
Yeah. Everybody knows.
But everybody knows Murdock is Daredevil.
Whoa. Does this go back to the Bendis run when he got outed by the tabloids?
No, he's like Iron Man. He's been outed and then
gone back in and come out. And got,
after Civil War sort of thing?
At least during Wade's run. I don't know how long Wade's been on the book. For about a little more than a year.
Well, beforehand, about a year and a half, and then
because he was on it before they did Marvel Now, or was did he go on?
No,
when
he
they
started with Marvel.
He started with Marvel Now, and was Murdock outed before then, or was that Wade's doing this time? I mean,
from what I remember, it happened during the Wade run.
Yeah, so yeah. It's only been a year, but yeah, it's common knowledge. So it's kind of interesting to see, because like they were tracking the plot of the first issue was they're tracking this kidnapper. And when they find her, he takes off and he's down the fire escape and he's changing or like taking off his suit with his Daredevil get up underneath, but in plain sight. You know, so it's kind of an interesting thing. And they almost seem to have a Dark Knight Returns moment where there's like two people who see him and it's like, he's like, what's he doing? It's like, oh, you're new here. You'll enjoy this kind of thing, because he's going to kick some ass and get the kid back.
What's next on the list then?
Well, let's stick with Daredevil's sometimes girlfriend, Elektra.
Oh, now, Elektra, this was a gorgeous issue.
Oh my god, Mike Del Mundo did the art, and this is possibly the most gorgeous book of the entire All New Marvel Now.
It really
is. Beautiful.
And the story, the storytelling of,
Hayden Blackman.
Of Hayden Blackman actually it complemented it so well, and it was like his writing was meant to go with this art.
And the thing is, you could see an Elektra book, it could work with a noir artist because she's an assassin and everything, but just I'm assuming this guy maybe painted it. Like, it's just how gorgeous and breathtaking this art is.
Yeah, it almost looks like it's watercolored or something.
Like it's
like,
I'm not sure
what he uses.
It's not something
you would know, Marvin. If
yes, I actually know both the artists and the colors in the book. They're ex-studio mates, friends of mine from Bright Angle
Studios.
Oh,
yeah?
Oh, really?
Cool.
That's cool.
Because Mike Del Mundo, yeah, I know Mike, beautiful artist, great lines. Marco D'Alfonso does the colors. And Marco was my old co-op student from Bright Angle.
Oh, wow. Right on.
Get them on the show.
I can try, but they're busy trying to pump Elektra on the schedule.
I was
going to
say, they're probably busy doing Elektra now.
So I expect no less from Mike Del Mundo and Marco D'Alfonso, because they're top level artists and really good at their job, really good at the craft.
One of the beautiful things is they mix a lot of the art in it, and I guess the story as it runs, it mixes a lot of pictures of Elektra dancing ballet, mm-hmm, and killing people, which sounds really odd, but it looks so gorgeous.
It's a choreographed dance of death.
That's actually probably a good way of putting it. And it's a fantastic number one. It gives you brief shots of her history. There's like the main pictures are of like Elektra dancing across the page, but there's little flashes in off colors in the back of like Bullseye stabbing her with her psi. So you get kind of a small rundown of her history. While setting up the new story, exactly.
And the new story, by the way, is fantastic.
Oh, great! Yeah,
where she has to go and track down this super assassin.
Yeah, basically, she's still her, you know, assassin-y self, but she does have her moral code. So there's only certain things she's going to do. She's not going to go after kids and stuff. But this was hands down the most gorgeous book that I read of the whole All New Marvel. Now
you'll have to get them on at the store. Work your magic, Marvin.
I'll do what I can, but unless you want a late book,
they can bring it here personally.
Yeah, they can come here. I mean, they can
hot up. Let them work on their deadlines. Get ahead of them.
Anyway, if that sort of thing, if you can drop the ball, the not drop the ball, drop the store's name. And
I can drop the ball easily. The ball is easily dropped, sir.
It's already falling downstairs.
Coming from you, yeah.
Drop the ball and just take my ball and go home.
Yeah.
Oh, but yeah, if art is your big thing with comic books, you know, and this is a fantastic story too. Don't get me wrong, but if your first love when it comes to enjoying comic books is the art, pick up Elektra. It is just breathtaking. And speaking of taking your breath away, I'm trying to find segues. It's not always working. How about Hulk?
Oh, right.
I thought Hulk was really
cool. I found the
cool.
ending took my breath away a little bit. I was not expecting
them
to go the direction that they did.
I don't know. Should we say it?
I was trying to keep it spoiler free in case people do want to pick
it's
up the
It's really
ones.
Cool. And it got me into
spoiler
Hulk's
warning.
Character.
Yeah, the Hulk comic, the creative team.
Mark Waid again.
Mark Waid again. So
and Mark Bagley
writing.
For art. So and fantastic art as well, because Bagley's great.
Again, I'm a huge Hulk fan. Anybody who comes to the store knows that my favorite character is Hulk.
Oh yeah.
So what they did with this comic book was just blew my mind, and I'm trying to figure out, due to the effects of what happened at the end of this Hulk, how it's fitting into Hulk continuity, because there's stuff in other comic books that this doesn't seem to have affected yet. So I'm just trying to figure that part out. But
if it's something,
I don't want to spoil it though.
I made some little notes as I was kind of getting the creative teams down, and that's something that I said is that although this problem might get resolved in the span of a story arc or two, it'll be interesting to see if it does have a long term effect.
Oh, absolutely! Like again, pick up Hulk number one.
Yeah, if you want to know what we're talking about, and I'm sure we've wet your creative appetite.
I think as of the recording of the show, I do have a couple copies of it left on the shelf. I think
so. Come buy 14 mil.
One of the things that I definitely want to say about this is, once again, like the Fantastic Four, Hulk's a character I could give a shit less about. This issue changed that. Didn't expect that.
Yeah.
Because I think I told you, like, dude, you have number two.
Yeah.
Before we leave. And that's amazing, because it's funny how one number one can really change your opinion of something. Because for me, I consider myself a pretty casual comic fan. Like, I've got my ponies, I got my Ninja Turtles, I got my Ghostbusters. I'm all licensed properties, in case you haven't noticed. Very rarely do I follow a traditional book. This Marvel, this all-new Marvel Now, I really like it. I'm actually genuinely surprised that I actually care. Never thought that was going to happen. And that's, I think,
you've been, of this.
You've
been saying that for a while, that you're out of comics, and it's going to take something big to get you back into mainstream.
Yeah. And it's so cool, the fact that, hell, hearing you guys talk about Daredevil. I heard people talk about Daredevil was awesome for the last, like, year or two.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, yeah, whatever, I'll wait till the movie comes out. Now, I kind of don't know if I can do that, and now that everything's kind of resetting, I can figure out where the hell I can fit into this continuity, where I can follow a character. I know you gave me Original Sin in my box. I don't know why you did, but whatever. And that's an interesting
idea. It's the summer event for Marvel, so I figured you'd want in on that, because we're probably going to do a show about it.
Yeah, so that's kind of cool. I mean, finding out what happens with...
caught up on that, too.
With Uatu the Watcher, who's a character I've actually really loved for a long time, ever since I read my first What If.
If you really want a good Uatu story, you should read Earth X.
I think I collected issues of that back in the day, but I don't know.
I got the trade of that.
That's really, like,
I should go back and read that.
So
again.
Good. Just avoid Universe of Paradise X.
Yeah. It's basically Marvel's version of Kingdom Come. kind of thing, mm-hmm. but they still handle it as their own. It's not trying to be a ripoff per se.
Yeah.
Fantastic graphic novel.
I think I've got individual issues. I kind of want to go back and look through my old, like, long boxes at home. I think I actually might tonight.
What's next on the list there, Jeff?
From Mark Wade, we move on to another well-known and pretty damn good writer, Mr. Warren Ellis, who is the scribe on one Moon Knight.
Ah, Moon Knight.
Miss this one.
All right. This book, I am loving. Okay. The third issue was launched a couple weeks ago, and just... the artistic direction that
Declan Shelvey
went with this was just fantastic. I'm just going to say that the contrast with the how he draws Moon Knight with pure white and the green tones he used in the book, mm-hmm. They just really, it was like opening up the book and having it smack you across the face saying, pay attention.
The best word I could use to describe the art in this, and I mean this in a completely positive way, is it's a trip. It's just, it's really trippy. And not just the colors, but even what's used, like that, the figure that shows up at the end of the first issue there.
Oh, yes. The moon bird, god.
The bird man kind of thing. Like that's.
It's, I can't remember its proper name.
It's creepy looking, but at the same time, it's really unique. And
Warren Ellis's writing has been just phenomenal on the book so far. And I have nothing but praise to say about Moon Knight. And Moon Knight, for those of you
Thoth?
Playing the... Yes, thank you.
It pays to have the internet handy.
Yes. And for those of you playing the home game, Moon Knight is the schizophrenic Batman of the Marvel Universe.
Basically, yeah. I haven't read enough of him, which is surprising considering I am such a big fan of the Bat. But he's been getting comparisons to Batman for years and years, like basically since his creation.
Well, he's a dude that has his gadgets. He's rich like Bruce Wayne because he was an actor that had lots of money.
He's got moonarangs.
And he's got moonarangs and he's got like the moon beam his ship. And he's got like he wears a cape and cowl, but it's pure white as opposed to pure black.
His
big thing is he claims to get his heightened powers and his heightened agility and stuff from
an Egyptian god.
From an Egyptian god of the moon. But the problem is he's also schizophrenic. So at the same time, you're not sure if he really does have powers or if he's just off his rocker
crazy. He's one of the most visually pleasing characters, I think.
He looks sweet.
He looks really unique. Like the stark contrast of so many heroes where he's just all white. Like that's one of the things that I loved about the Nemesis book from Mark Miller.
Yes.
Was that character was dressed all in white. And it's the same thing with Moon Knight. Is like, first of all, it's got to be a bitch to clean. He must have such a huge dry cleaning.
Well, when he's rich.
Yeah, I guess
he probably has disposables.
Or that's he's got too. That unstable molecule from Reed Richards and just repels dirt.
Oh, that's
dirt.
Possible,
that's true.
Scotch-guarded!
But he's just... he's running around
Reed-guarded.
With... Reed-guarded. He's running around with, like, couch plastic all over him.
Well, actually, in a previous run of Moon Knight, there was an explanation why Moon Knight wears... other than the fact of why he wears white. It's the fact that for his god, I think Khonshu is the name of his Egyptian god.
Yes,
is that he's the god of vengeance in the Egyptian pantheon, and so part of the reason why he wears it is other than the moon is the fact that he wants you to see him coming. So that's why he wears the white, because if you see him, you know he's coming for you. He's gonna lay the worst beating on you you've ever felt in your entire life.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know what? It works for him. It works for him.
I was really interested. Like this, like I said, I haven't read a lot of Moon Knight, but I really enjoyed this book. I thought it was visually pleasing. I liked when he was in the suit, too. And I don't mean like his superhero getup. There's a point where he's in like a three-piece Moon Knight suit, and he's got like a Moon Knight mask, but not the hood. It's like he's like a dapper. It almost reminded me of like the Punisher Noir, where he had the mask on. But it was an all white suit, and he had an all white, like almost like a lucha mask, but full face lucha mask with a moon in the forehead. Like it was a really cool look.
So how's he rich and he have a good tailor?
So what else we got?
What else do we have? We have
Nightcrawler.
Yeah, sure.
Because it was awesome.
We'll go into Nightcrawler. Sure.
Nightcrawler. This one, once again, a character I haven't cared about since the X-Men arcade game.
No stranger to him. It's written by Chris Claremont, so
yeah,
you know it's going to be in good hands, because who knows Nightcrawler better
than his creator?
Exactly.
Yeah, this book, basically, people are trying to come and kill him. He fights some giant dude in like a robot suit, and he runs into some magician, and you and I couldn't figure out who it was when like we read it, but he has these little Banff dudes that show up, which I had no idea he's from hell. I really had no idea. That's how long I've been out of it.
Kind of.
But yeah, I don't know. Just artwork in this book is really colorful. It's really
It's vibrant. It's
very attractive.
It suits him.
It suits Nightcrawler.
Nightcrawler's a colorful character. He's a fun character. I guess probably should mention the art. Sorry. And the art is, I had the name on the tip of my tongue. There we go. Todd Nock.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, Nock. Sorry. Okay. That's the problem. You never know how to pronounce these.
Todd Nock's a great artist. I'm surprised.
I really think this may be another book I might have to follow. Like, I may give each of these Marvel books that I'm following, I'm going to give 5 issues to. If I like them after 5 issues, I'll just keep going. Because I figure if that's an... That's a fair assessment.
Is Nightcrawler ongoing or is it a miniseries?
It's an ongoing. Oh, nice. Yeah. He just came back
from Amazing
X-Men.
Yeah.
Yeah, they brought him back in
Amazing X-Men.
And I guess they just
rescued him from heaven.
Yeah, I guess that could be.
I know that it's kind of like one of.
I've seen the issue. Yeah, that he's getting invaded by Azazel or something.
Azazel
like that.
Is trying to invade heaven with his pirate ship.
With his
and
little
X-Men
redeemer.
and his own
version of like evil Bamfs.
Yeah, and Nightcrawler's Bamfs have been creating a portal in the basement of the X-Men of the new Wolverine school, the Jean Grey school. And have been trying to, and they finally activate the machine and basically suck him back in.
Kind of trying to acclimate back to being alive, I guess. I really enjoyed the first issue. I found it was fun without being campy or silly.
Yeah.
Nightcrawler, because Nightcrawler is one of those characters who he can be serious, but he can also be goofy and fun too. And sometimes it's hard to find that balance in a book, you know?
You know what it felt like to me?
Why?
It felt like a good episode of a good TV show. It felt really rewarding to read it. You smiled. You're like, oh, that's really cool happening. I don't know. It's one of those books I unexpectedly dug. Because when Chris handed it to me, like, all right, it's Nightcrawler, whatever. And I didn't expect it to be a quick read for me. Because I was ripping through. I think I read 12 books that afternoon. I was hanging out here.
I remember you tweeting the picture of how many you had in front of you.
The stack.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I was honestly surprised how good it was. And, I don't know. Like I said about 10 minutes ago, Marvel Now, you're honestly surprising me.
Yeah.
Please continue to not suck.
Here's one.
Kill Dupe. With a flamethrower.
Well, we'll see. Here's one that anyone who knows me probably wouldn't be surprised that I enjoyed. Punisher.
Oh, yes.
I've heard people say this book sucks.
I was on the fence, though, and this is coming off of Greg Rucka's phenomenal 2-year run with the character. And
Rucka literally was...
almost end-all, be-all. Like, this was a fantastic book that he did, and I wasn't sure coming into it. My wife, actually, I didn't even get the first issue. My wife picked it up for me because she knows I'm a Punisher fan. Again, written by Nathan Edmondson, the same one who does Black Widow.
Yeah.
But I like it. I like what he's done with it. Franks, first of all, he's in L.A.
The artist is different, though, than Black Widow.
Yes, it's Mitch Gerad, I believe, if I'm pronouncing that right. Frank's in L.A. now, so it's a different surrounding. He's got a bit of a supporting cast, and I think that's probably the main gripe that a lot of people have with it, because Frank's commonly a loner, but part of the problem with him being a loner is there's only so much you can do with a character by himself. He's got a nice kind of supporting cast that I personally think helps him. Mitch's art, I think, is
very well suits
Punisher. Yeah,
and just as a brief description before we move on to the next comic, Frank has figured out that the head of the snake of the crime families that he's been chasing for however many years the Punisher has been doing this in continuity, mm-hmm, is actually from L.A., hence why he's moved to L.A.
Yeah.
Now, question, with the Punisher, does he exist in the main Marvel universe?
Yes.
Okay.
He's actually a bit of a spoiler. one of the weapons that the guys he's chasing bring out to help take care of him is Electro.
Okay, yeah, because for the longest time...
Because they have. When Garth Ennis started doing the Punisher Max series,
yeah,
that was out of continuity.
Oh, yeah, because that's the last one that I read. Was
you, you would see some, like Nick Fury showed up in a Punisher Max, but for the most part, it was out of continuity, as if superheroes didn't exist. But for the most part, Punisher does exist within continuity, yes.
Okay, so he's not fighting big heavy hitters like Venom and Carnage, but he'd fight someone like Electro.
And I find that's what works with them, is you don't necessarily want him, other than the occasional event where he, it's nice to see him mix it up with other heroes and villains. You don't want to see it too much, but it's nice to see it once in a while.
Okay, so it's kind of like they're taking the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. approach to it.
Sort of.
Okay. Yeah.
Magneto, I want to talk about that one next.
We'll try to hammer through a couple of these quick, because I know we don't have a lot of time. We want to get through as many as we can. Magneto was interesting. The thing I found interesting is that he's still very much his typical Eric Lyncher self and killing people and everything, but the book really kind of builds him up as almost an anti-hero.
Yeah, it really is. It really does. And the creative team behind it is...
Cullen Bunn is the writer, and artist is Gabriel Hernandez-Walta.
And you know what? I actually like, again, this is another one. The book is presenting itself almost is very noir. Mm-hmm. It's a darker look at Magneto. In fact, he actually changes his costume to a black costume during the book. And he's basically going on a revenge streak, almost trying to find out who sent the Sentinels after the X-Men the final time. Mm-hmm. And it's. The take on the book is he has broken himself off of the X-Men, because for a while Magneto was playing
the
good
guy.
He was
with Cyclops' side, right?
Yeah, he was playing the good guy, and he's now gone back to tapping into his villain roots. But he's doing it for a good cause. So, well, like you said,
some
anti-hero.
Could argue he almost always has done it for
true.
A good cause.
This is true.
Great twist. I won't spoil it, but great twist in there with that Sentinel that you didn't expect to see coming.
Yeah.
In that first issue, I thought was really well done. I found the art worked well with it, and it was almost, like you said, kind of a noir book. Well, a lot of what I'm finding with the all-new Marvel Nows is that either the art really reflects well,
or
it's really,
it doesn't.
There's no middle ground, really.
It's either awesome or it's crap.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah.
And that's one of the gripes I've had with Marvel with this, is the fact that they either completely missed the point or they hit it directly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, one I definitely wanted to mention, because this book I really, really enjoyed and didn't know what to expect from it, was Ms. Marvel. They've introduced G. Willow Wilson, introduced a new character called Kamala Khan. She's a...
Islamic, isn't she?
Islamic American. She was born and raised in Jersey, you know, so I mean, and she is becoming the new Ms. Marvel. She'll have a different power set. Art by Adrian Alfona is... really well done, I find, and suits the book. I like that they're bringing in some ethnic diversity, even if some people have complained that it seemed a little bit forced, but I'd almost rather it be a little bit forced than not have it at all.
I'd rather have them take a chance on something. Why not?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I feel like a lot of her ethnicity was brought up in the first issue without ramming it down your throat.
Which is weird, because I heard the opposite online. Once again, this is something I haven't read. I've only seen a few panels from it. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a good choice. I mean, why the hell not?
Yeah, and she doesn't really develop her powers until the end of the first issue, so I don't know past that how it goes. Chris would have a better idea over me if he's read it. But that first issue is pretty much a pure introduction, because she's a brand spanking new character.
Yeah.
So you really have to bring her in, and you see that she's a fan of superheroes, and she loves Captain Marvel and everything. And then, you know, and she's a teenager, so much like Spider-Man, she's got her own issues and things and problems in her life that she's got to deal with. But I thought it was really well done, and I think it's not necessarily the best of the all-new Marvel Nows, but I think because I didn't really have any expectations of it, it makes the impact that much bigger. You know what I mean? So I found it. I was really surprised, pleasantly, at how good this
Marvin,
book was.
Marvin, would you like to say anything? You're grinning over there.
Oh, I'm just very proud to hear about it, because it's actually Adrian Alfona, is another ex-studio mate from Brand Anvil Studios.
Oh, another one of yours, yeah. Nice.
So yeah, so it's good. I'm glad to see him back at Marvel, then drawing for them the new book.
Yeah, it's a good looking book, because it's not, you know, your typical, like, it's not like 90s comics. Like, it's mm-hmm. it has a very brightness to it, mm-hmm. but it's not super vibrant, colorful, if that makes sense.
If you like Adrian's work on this book, you should really go back and read his first run on Runaways with Brian K. Vaughan.
Oh yeah, he did some Runaways.
He was the original creator, one of the original artists.
The original artist on Runaways.
Original writer.
Oh, right on. Okay, well, I've probably seen some of his work, because I've seen some of the Runaway stuff. Nice.
Yeah. So yeah.
But that was one that I really, really enjoyed.
All right, well, we are out of time.
Just in closing, I just wanted to mention a few other books, not get too much into them, just say good, bad, or ugly.
Okay.
Okay. She-Hulk number one, ugly.
I didn't like the art.
Yeah, you told me to avoid it.
It's apparently been well-received, I've heard, from some people, but I didn't like the art personally.
No, that's why I said ugly. Cyclops number one was good.
If you have a chance to check out
Cyclops number one, it was good. The same with Inhuman number one.
That book was actually really fun.
I really enjoyed that. And Joe Madd is the artist. And who doesn't like Joe Madd?
I was kind of indifferent towards Inhuman, but I don't know a lot about the Inhumans.
We didn't really get a chance to talk about Amazing Spider-Man number one. And that one, due to the nature that it was a collection of several stories...
It's up and down.
It was up and down because each story had its strengths and weaknesses. But as far as a big event that Spider-Man was rebooted at number one, if you can track yourself a copy of this down... It might be something to look into.
All right. I want to end on a slightly good note. Try to make this one quick. Loki, Agent of Asgard. Thoughts?
Haven't read it.
I really enjoyed it.
It's, I was begrudgingly at the beginning when that first issue had Loki looking like Ian Somerhalder from Vampire Diaries. Yeah. And I just look at the cover. He does. Trust me. I had no real good hopes for it. But I thought it was really, really good. Yeah. Especially like, and it's another form of the movies reflecting... continuity where Loki's a little younger and they're kind of making him an anti-hero as well.
And it's been well written and well drawn since. Some of the other issues that we didn't talk about, New Warriors, they restarted the New Warriors book up.
Same with X-Factor.
If you want to get back into a book with Speedball and Scarlet Spider and track their adventures, that's the one to go after.
X-Factor's got a brand
new
team.
Is it the original Speedball? Or?
Yeah. They've gone back to the bouncy, goofy...
As opposed to the penance I'm...
Yeah. No, they're back to his goofy Speedball pre-Stanford.
X-Factor's got a brand new team. We've got Quicksilver on it and Polaris.
Yep. There's also the all-new X-Factor, which has been fantastic as well. It's a well-written, interesting take on the team. Basically, a corporate headquarters basically purchases X-Factor and turns them into their corporate superhero team. It's kind of an interesting take, and it's really working for the book so far.
And Wolverine?
Wolverine, again, this was more of a, hey, they're pandering to the number one. But this is the first one where he didn't have his healing factor
I don't want to say a villain, but he seems to be conspiring with some not-so-nice people.
This is going to lead into Wolverine, the death of thing, this fall. Finally, there's the Iron Fist new title. This one here was, I wasn't keen on the art, but the story was fantastic. So that's all I had to say in closing.
So there you go. Whether you agree with us or not, or if there's anything you haven't read that you heard us talk about that you wanted to pick up, head down to 14 Mill Street if you're in Orangeville, or even just your local comic shop, support those brick and mortars. And pick up some Marvel, because if they can get Mike back into reading mainstream comics, they're doing something right.
Yeah, that really says something.
And avoid dupe.
At all.
In fact, actually, you know what, Chris? You should order issues of Dupe. People should come and buy them to set them on fire.
The problem is,
still getting money, but the book's on fire.
The problem is the sales will go up because he's buying them, he's ordering them all, and then
you don't
want to
see the miniseries becoming ongoing.
Shit. Anyway, I'm Mike the Birdman Dodd with
Jeff DeHaan,
Marvin Law,
and Chris Peddle, owner and operator of the Gauntlet.
Screw Dupe.